Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed, and this is Merrick Larwood.
Welcome to March.
March and a world of films.
All the good films are finished now, and we're looking for ready for the summer blockbusters of all the terrible films.
Yeah, it's that vacuum before the summer blockbusters begin at the moment, isn't it?
I feel a bit depressed because we've had such an amazing run of films.
Yeah, incredible, really good, worthy films season.
It's been almost a heroin injection of films, and now we've got
the cold turkey. Well, you're not looking forward to any of the big summer blockbusters this year, are you?
No.
Okay. Speaking of which, I want to get your opinion on the news about these pants. What do you think?
Beautiful.
Too tight?
I mean, you could have pulled them up?
No. No, I like the way they feel against my ankles.
Okay, well, it's a new look.
Yeah. No, your opinion on the Ghostbusters news. Have you heard about this?
We talked about the reboot.
Yeah, no, but they've since announced that there's also going to be an all-male one, and to create films of a larger, expanded universe, like Marvel are doing with all of theirs.
They'll ruin it. They can't help ruin it. They've ruined... Well, as aliens, well, isn't they talking about? They're talking about discounting the third Alien and remaking it.
Well, they're not. They Blomkamp's come out and said no, that's not what he's doing. But what he's actually doing isn't yet clear. But yes, everyone seems to want an expanded universe these days, and it's all Marvel's fault. It's a hell of a risky move to plan and announce you're going to do an expanded universe before the first film has even come out. Sony completely screwed it up with Spider-Man and had to scrap all of their plans.
It's all merchandising.
Well, exactly.
It's basically whoever has the most money. It used to be whoever had the most power rewrites history or the winners. Now it's whoever has the most money rewrites our whole cultural world by making things, by sullying
the good name of Ghosts.
And making everything rubbish again.
Oh.
And then there'll be another reboot every 3 years' time. Another reboot and Origins. Let's not even talk about this. I mean, it's making me depressed, which is a good job.
I'm sorry.
It's a great segue into me going to cinema to see Still Alice.
Oh, is that a depressing film?
It is one of the most depressing experiences I've had at the cinema.
Why don't you describe the setup of Still Alice?
So Still Alice is, probably you've heard of it from Julianne Moore, won the Oscar for Best Actress for this. So she's a linguistics professor, and she's got a nice family, married to Alec Baldwin. She's the mother of Kate Bosworth, who incidentally looks like she's had some weird plastic surgery.
It sounds about right.
And also she's a mother to Kristen Stewart, who plays a sort of Kristen Stewart again in it. Anyway, yeah. She starts to lose, forget things, and she's realised she's got early onset Alzheimer's disease. And I found it personally terrifying, because I've got Alzheimer's in my family. My granddad just died of Alzheimer's a few weeks ago. We just died from old age. We had dementia. Well, anyway, it was just... I found it really hard. So it's her slow decline. and her family and how they cope with it, and how she, because she's sort of operating at such a high level, is how she manages to sort of, is it almost like a bigger, a greater fall for her, because she can't speak and she keeps on testing herself, how she can remember words, and then her relationships with her family change, so she becomes sort of cared for. It's just a story about Alzheimer's, really. And it's, you know, really well acted. I thought it was quite strange having Alec Baldwin in there.
He's such a sort of cuddly figure of fun these days.
It's a separate point. It's become, this is a separate point to film. It's odd how you have someone sort of known for being a, who was a normal actor,
and now he's a comedian,
and now became a great comic actor.
But also, Julianne Moore played his girlfriend in 30 Rock as well.
So I never really watched 30 Rock. So
if you've seen a lot of that, you know, she was in it quite a bit as his Boston girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
So it's an odd combination to put...
Well, that would probably ruin the whole film.
To evoke those characters for you.
But even he just seems like an odd husband, because he's such a personality in his own right now, I suppose, that that's a bit that changes the film. And they have got a lot of stars in it playing the roles, which I think is not really, maybe detracts slightly from the story.
Okay. Julianne Moore is fantastic.
But she's brilliant, and she's very watchable. She's, I still think Felicity Jones' performance in the Theory of Everything was a better performance.
Okay.
I think she should have won the Oscar and was overlooked. But the Oscars love someone getting, they love a tragedy.
And they also love the latest issue that is, you know, widely talked about and known, so people will know what it's about, but has still not had that one piece of defining art about it, you know? You know, Million Dollar Baby was about euthanasia, and, you know, you've got...
There seems to be a lot about... last two books I've read, when I'm reading one called Elizabeth is Missing, about a woman with Alzheimer's, and this came out in Alzheimer's, I think I've overdosed on Alzheimer's, because it is the greatest horror. It's that, I think nothing can really describe that slow death of a person. So what you're seeing visually is the same old person or person you knew, but they're losing their personality, so you don't really know, and it's really difficult because you don't really, there's no set point when that person's gone. That's why I found it when my granddad died, the last two or three years was just him just becoming a shadow of himself, to the point where that's no longer has any of the personality that the person I knew, and you almost don't want to see that person because it ruins your memory of them. And there's a point when they're talking about her as if she's not no longer her when she's in the room. It's just depressing. I found it really terrifying, and it's an important issue to bring to the fore. I think Alzheimer's has become a bit more relevant lately, and I think there will be a lot
because it's so prevalent.
Well, people are living a lot older, and I think that a lot of people, especially of our generation, did a lot of drugs, and, you know, even when you were smoking weed and you know, and E's and all that in the 80s and 90s, and I bet that has an effect, you know, a latent effect on the brain. We're going to see a lot more mental illnesses because people lived till their, you know, the 80s and 90s, and they didn't before. So it's I don't know whether it's one of those films where I prefer to see a documentary, where that would have been more actually interesting if you want to know the facts. This is just so true to life. There's not really many other stories. The main story is a professor struggling with early onset Alzheimer's and how she deals with that. There aren't really any other huge strands to it.
I mean, that's enough to get your head around and heart around, though, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, that's rather than, you know, the daughter entering drag racing or whatever. I mean, you don't need it.
I mean, it's an odd experience coming out of the cinema, similar to when I saw Iris, where lots of old people went to watch it years ago and they were upset. Coming out of the cinema and thinking, oh, that's a possible future for me as I get older, and it makes you want to sort of get up and do something. And, you know, that
while you're still yourself
sees the day.
Yeah
I found it really depressing.
Is it bleak, sort of weepy sad, or is it just sort of brings you down sad?
It's a bit I don't know whether it's interesting if you have sometimes films that touch you at a certain moment,
yeah,
where they're particularly relevant to what's going on in your life. Maybe that was the case with this film, but and I think as you get older, I would be fascinated to see what someone in their 20s, or, you know, I'm in my late 30s now, and you just you start to realise, even small things of ageing, is you realise you're getting old.
Mm.
For the first time, you realise, oh, you are aching in the morning, you know, joints hurt, and you go and play. I went and played basketball today down the courts, and even I was just missing the whole time, just playing it, and I think, oh, this is the not towards Alzheimer's, not to be depressing, but you think that's right. That is your,
but it's downhill from here.
No, know? Just the sense of mortality which you have when in your 20s, it isn't there, and I think it becomes ever present as you get older, which in a way is a good, in many ways. You think, oh, what, it makes you readjust your values and what you're looking for. Anyway, this is, I'm getting way off the point of films, but I'm interested to see what a 20-year-old, if they found it as absorbing.
Yeah, as yeah, there's enough to connect to there. But I mean, but more and more, as you've touched on already, more and more people will have experienced a member of their family getting Alzheimer's,
yeah,
one kind or another. I mean, it's a hugely, hugely prevalent and growing disease. It's a huge problem. I've only ever read sort of little articles here and there and couldn't quote any stats or anything, but it is, you know, it's such a relevant issue.
Yeah.
You know, almost more than cancer or whatever, although it's not a race.
But I think I wanted to see a documentary to see what the actual
facts are about it.
Yeah, I'm interested. I mean, every case is different because everyone's brain functions in a different way, I'm sure, and people remember different things. And I think that I noticed with Alzheimer's, you can sort of get angry and have people's personalities change and see people like swearing a lot and stuff like that, which is quite...
Well, it must be frustration, you know, that you can remember being better than you are now.
But, well, just people's personalities changing a little bit. I don't know if they captured that in this film.
Okay. It sounds sort of the kind of thing you don't really rate, as in, you know, give it a number.
No, I think it's about 7 or 8, you know.
Yeah,
that.
Sure. But it's just a well-made film, is what you say.
But it's...
Would you recommend people see it, or would you, you know, is it a moving sort of, you know, changing your perspective experience, or is it just sort of going through a rather harrowing thing that you already know about?
I found it a bit of both, really. Found it a bit... I think what was good about it, in a way, they picked the character of a professor, a linguistics professor. So in a way, it's almost sort of a bit... It's the person who loses their language is the person in the highest echelons of that world. So that was made more interesting, seeing how it can happen to someone whose life is really successful and they've got a stable family.
Mm.
But maybe it would have been more interesting if they had picked someone who was already sort of, you know, down and out, and how they struggled, and how they became, people were unable to diagnose it because they were, you know, and how a poor person deals with it.
Yeah.
Rather than someone who's got a really supportive family and
of famous people.
Of famous people.
Yeah. All right. Well, Still Alice.
If you're feeling depressed, not the best.
If you're feeling happy, but you're angry, you're happy. Maybe go and see.
Yeah, you're feeling. You want to be taking down a little bit of your happiness and be aware of.
I'm a bit pumped up at the moment. I need taking down a peg or two.
Yeah, it's only Monday or Tuesday. I've got no right to be in this mood. Put that on.
Slap bang, rock bottom.
Yeah,
there
back down to normal.
Gift for you all. Great. Well, Still Alice. If that sounds like your cup of tea, then go and see that. Have we got any letters?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're running a bit short as usual.
Of course.
It's just that people aren't interested.
we read sort of 2 or 3 a week, though. So, that's quite high turnover of letters, isn't it? Okay.
Here we go.
This is from Fran Jolly.
Well, before we start...
Yeah?
Say I do want to write in.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got the stamps prices are so expensive these days. I want to find an easier way of doing.
Well, we've set up a system of electronic mail, so people don't have to spend a penny on contacting us. Basically,
what'd you do then?
You just email dearfilmfandango@gmail.com.
Dear Film Fandango, not
Film Fandango. No, Dear Film Fandango. Someone else has got Film Fandango for some reason.
So that's maybe why we don't. I mean, someone's pointed out before we.
Yeah, the number of emails that Film Fandango must be receiving and going, why did I get that name?
Dear
Film Fandango. And it's dear as in D E A R. It's not like a deer, you know?
Okay.
It's Dear Film Fandango.
This was. There's a lot of permutations here.
I know. We. yeah, and we'll read your letter out on the podcast. Or if you'd like to talk to each other, then you can go to Facebook.com/filmfandango, or you can tweet us at Mr. David Reed, at Marek Larwood, or at Film Fandango. There's no deer in that one. But this letter is from Fran Jolly.
Who he's written in before.
He has. He's from Bournemouth. What's the accent in Bournemouth? It's
just do a surfer's accent.
All right, mate. In that kind of surfer,
maybe like a stoner.
A stoner.
Yeah.
Or like the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, just doing that sort of thing.
Hello again, film boffins. I've been having a nostalgic time recently, going through classic films that I've yet to see. I watched The Deer Hunter and To Catch a Thief recently, and wasn't disappointed. Although every significant scene in The Deer Hunter was ruined for me by being spoofed or referenced over the last 35 years. I would like to ask you both, and your guest if they are available. Bad luck, Jolly. What are the best movies of the last 5 decades? One per decade. Here are my choices, Fran Jolly's choices. 60s, Night of the Living Dead. 70s, Jaws. 80s, Aliens. 90s, Forrest Gump. The 2000s, Amelie. Thank you ever so much, and hopefully you can introduce me to some other fantastic movies. Francis Jolly.
Well, that is a big... That's almost like your favourite films of all time question, really.
It is. I mean, that's a huge question, but we're going to attempt to answer it. So, where do we start? Was it the 60s?
Yeah. Also, quickly, I should say something that's on the Facebook page before we do that. You mentioned is there a database where you can look up all the films that you want to see where they're found?
Yeah.
I'm not saying the best way. So you can find what provider is showing the films online.
Is it find any film you're going to talk about?
Yeah.
It's bollocks.
Oh, right.
He doesn't do that at all. All it does is point to one service, which is a rival to these Netflix and things, and then point to, like, Amazon and stuff. It doesn't tell you what's on Blinkbox or what's on Netflix.
I thought it did.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, well,
sorry,
ignore that.
I knew about that already, and it's not very good.
Okay.
Sorry.
Let's move on to the question then.
Yes.
1960s.
The 1960s. Oh, what a decade for films it was, wasn't it? Oh, there were some good films in the 1960s.
I remember the 1960s like they were the 1970s.
Wow, that is close. I mean,
my favourite. So here's ones that I basically mark everything out 10 on IMDb, so yes. I can go back to it.
So what things have you done?
Well, the obvious one, which I think you have to say is probably the was so influential and hugely ahead of its time, is 2001.
Yeah, a great film.
Which came out in 1968. Yeah.
It's incredible. And then another Kubrick, I'd say, is Dr. Strangelove from 64. It's another incredible film.
Yes.
I mean, it's not as influential on the genre, on any genre, but I absolutely love it. I would watch Dr. Strangelove more times than 2001.
Yeah. I think it's just an... You just think, oh, Peter Sellers is one of the greatest actors ever after that film. Other ones I've enjoyed, A Man for All Seasons.
Yeah.
And the Sidney Poitier, is it Ray Steiger? I can't remember his name. Was it Ray, Rod Steiger? Is that the right? In the Heat of the Night.
I've not seen In the Heat of the Night.
Oh, it's great. It's Sidney Poitier plays this detective going to an old sort of racist southern town to investigate this murder, but he's high up, and Rod Steiger's the sheriff of the town, and they're both brilliant together. I really enjoyed the claustrophobic feel of it all.
I like the film stock in the 60s. Things just were slightly cooler, you know, like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid is another fantastic one that just, yeah, there's just, you can't really recapture that. Everything's so glossy now. Everything's so...
Yeah. The other one I think up there for me is Psycho.
I've still only seen the Vince Vaughn
See, in between, for me, Psycho or 2001. I mean, it's quite hard to pick any others because these are...
What?
But Psycho was 1960, so that's right at the edge of the...
Honourable mention as well, probably, even though it's not the best film of the 60s at all, but Dr. No started the whole Bond thing off, and Goldfinger and From Russia With Love were all in the 60s as well.
I'm really angry that you even mentioned those.
Really? You're not a Bond fan? I mean, it's, you know, they're dated now, but they are good.
But yeah, I think if you go for 2001, would you watch 2001 over and over again? That's the thing, it's quite...
I have done, you know, but only sort of with, you know, 5 or 6 year gaps in between. I mean, last time I saw it was live with a full orchestra, which was amazing. But, yeah, I don't know. I've seen it now.
I feel a bit bad with not even counting the 40s and 50s. Just ignoring all
that.
Well,
we could do that another time, maybe. Yeah. That's another game. Well,
so, for me, that's what I think. So, 2001 or Psycho, you know, I don't know which one.
Yeah, I mean, 2001's hard to argue with. Yeah, I think Dr. Strangelove, for me, just in pure enjoyment, I'm not saying it is ostensibly the most influential film of the 60s, but, yeah. Well,
1970s, then.
1970s.
Franjoli picks Jaws. I mean, that's a good shout.
It's a good shout. I mean, obvious ones, you've got The Godfather and The Exorcist are in the 70s.
I never really enjoyed The Exorcist. I never really thought it was the film that everyone banged on about.
I do love it, but yeah, I know what you mean. Star Wars obviously started in the 70s. It's tricky, this. I mean, I love Kubrick so much, and he's still doing such good work, but Alien might have it for me. I might agree. What did Fran put?
He put Jaws. I think other ones that may be up there. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
One of the greatest comedies of all time. You could have Blazing Saddles.
Oh, I love Blazing Saddles so much.
I love The Conversation. One of my favourite films. Real, feels like it's a real 70s film. The Coppola film. And science fiction. I really like Westworld as well.
And Westworld's fantastic.
What are you going to go for then?
Oh, it's a tricky one, this. There are so many. Life of Brian's in the 70s, late 70s, gets in there in 1979. Do I prefer Life of Brian to Blazing Saddles? That's tricky. I'm going to go Life of Brian, I think.
As your favourite film in the 70s? Yeah. I mean, they're enjoyable, those films, but Monty Python, but I never really thought they were.
Or Chinatown. Chinatown.
Not that great.
It's brilliant, Chinatown. You're wrong. No, you know what? I'm going to go Alien. I'm going to go Alien for the 70s.
Okay. I would have probably picked Jaws if it wasn't picked already. I think Alien's up there. Remember Apocalypse Now? I quite enjoyed as well. I am... One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I think Jaws is probably, in terms of how tight that script is.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for Jaws. Why not?
Well, it started Steven Spielberg's career, which, you know, is hugely influential in terms of important films. But
I think I'm always thinking about how great films are. My barometer is if it's on television, you have to carry on watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You suck within 2 minutes, you're just there, being, oh, not again.
I've still not seen The French Connection. That's one of those famous ones that is still, you know,
Popeye,
on my to-do
Popeye
list.
Doyle, wasn't it? That?
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is my memory on the Still Alice thing, it's so bad, I can barely remember what... That's a great thing, isn't it, I suppose? But you carry on watching.
You're a shadow of the person you were when we started doing this podcast.
You can enjoy the same films. Every 5 years, you can enjoy the same films if it's brand new.
Yeah. Yes.
Right, so we've got the 60s, we've got 2001, we both went for that. 70s.
I didn't go for 2001.
What did you say? Oh, okay. 70s, Jaws, I agree with Fran Jolly on that. But, you know, One for the Cuckoo's Nest is up there, and you said Alien. 1980s.
Oh, I mean, this is so tough now. The 80s is my decade. I mean, they're all such fun. The fun just explodes in the 80s.
This is what, yeah, you've got Ghostbusters.
You've got The Terminator, you've got Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Indiana Jones, as in Raiders of the Lost Ark, starts in the 80s. That's fantastic. Blade Runner, Aliens, The Shining. I mean, it's
Back to the Future, one of the greatest ever films.
Yeah, Back to the Future, Princess Bride.
It's not up there. It's Back to brilliant. The Future.
Well, maybe not. Empire Strikes Back is in the 80s as well, isn't it? Oh God,
this I mentioned it the other week. I think the best film.
Yeah,
I it's either Back to the Future, probably for the most original film, or the remake of The Thing, the John Carpenter remake of The Thing with Kurt Russell.
Incredible film. Absolutely. What year is that?
84.
Oh, that's tough to beat, isn't it? I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark, for me, I, you know, absolutely love. Can watch it so
I think
many
you've got
times.
To be subjective, I mean.
What do you mean?
What did he go for? He went for Aliens.
Aliens.
So I saw Aliens again recently, and I don't know.
It's great, but a lot of the most creative stuff was done by the first film, you see. So I don't know if you can really give a sequel that credit. You know, I think it's an incredible sequel. And I think sequels have proven time and time again how difficult it is to do a good sequel that is different to the first film, but is, you know, embraces the spirit of it and the world of it. Aliens is a fantastic example of that, but I think I find the Marines all too annoying to watch it many times.
That's it, when you want them to die. I mean, there's nothing in the they get to establish the characters more in Alien.
Yeah,
and there's some brilliant moments where almost they sort of copied that tension of finding where the alien is on the map when Dallas goes into the tunnel.
Yeah.
And they're following the beat, and that's all done again a little bit with the motion sensors in Aliens.
They're right on top of us.
What are you going to go for then?
Oh, you know, I love Who Framed Roger Rabbit in terms of a creative, incredibly well told story. It could be my favourite one of the decade.
Talking of Bob Hoskins, you've got The Long Good Friday as well. You've seen that?
Yeah, incredible film.
I think that was 1980, I think.
Oh, is this true? What are you going for? Back to the Future. Makes sense.
Depends what mood I'm in. If I'm on a Friday night mood, Back to the Future, I just want to see Michael J. Fox just exiting a room and half run as he does.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go for Raiders. I think it's, you know, it's too influential in my childhood.
The Thing is one
of
my favourite ever films.
Yeah.
I want to go for joint prize.
The Thing.
Joint prize, The Thing, and Back to the Future.
Can I have The Thing as well?
No.
Oh. Okay.
You can go Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, I have done.
1990s, here we go. It's 90s. Odd how it almost takes. How long? Here's a separate question. Does it take a film to be released before it really sort of soaks itself into the consciousness of filmgoers' minds and become a classic? Because I think 80s films are now, like Ghostbusters was a classic. If 15 years ago, would we have been looking at them as classics? I don't know.
Well, probably,
the 90s films always seem almost too fresh.
You need to hit your 30s, or, you know, a generation needs to hit their 30s to really appreciate the things they were watching in their teens, you know.
He's picked Fran Jolly's picked Forrest Gump. That's quite an emotional
bold choice.
It's a good it gets slagged off, that film.
It's a good film. It is a good film. Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I mean,
The Matrix. I mean, redefined action films entirely. Like, the sequels are toss, but
I think Pulp Fiction, every time I watch it, I forget how good it was.
And Silence of the Lambs is another one of those as well. You forget how great it is.
But the films in the 90s I loved. I went to see two films twice in a week.
Right.
And they're both, well, when I was about, must have been like 20, 21, they were so good that I had to go and see them again, which is the only time I've ever done that. And they were Seven.
Yeah.
And Usual Suspects.
Yeah, both brilliant.
But I think the usual suspect maybe doesn't stand up to this. It's that that's a typical.
Once they pulled the trick on you,
it's like the Sixth Sense thing, but better than that. But that's a great first time viewing film.
Absolutely
suspects.
Incredible. And Fight Club's probably up there in that group of just cool films that everyone's just sort of tried to copy since, you know. But what would I go for? You know what? Honourable mention to Jurassic Park. Brilliant film. Groundhog Day is 1993.
Groundhog Day is a good choice.
I think I would go for, purely because I absolutely love it, I'd go for Leon.
Really?
Yeah, 1994.
I've got some more. Goodfellas, 1990.
Yeah.
One of my favourite ever cinema experiences. I went to, with my school friend John Bradley, went to Lake Cinema in the middle of the summer. And we just turned, what was it, I'm talking about Terminator 2, so when did that come out, 91?
Amazing. Again, James Cameron doing a sequel.
I think we were just 15, so we were just allowed to go and see it or something.
It's a phenomenal piece of
work.
And
we had the whole cinema to ourselves. And the chases in that, the truck chase.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
But the characters as well are fantastic. I mean, what they've done with Sarah Connor in that one, from who she is in the first one, it's a brilliant performance.
What is interesting, here's a little bit of Terminator 2 gossip we may have talked to before. You know that Linda Hamilton's a twin.
Yes.
But you know, in one of the famous scenes, spoilers for people who haven't seen Terminator 2, I don't know who you are, but you should be shot by a Terminator if you haven't seen it. The guy who, the security guard who gets the coffee from the machine.
Is a twin as well.
Yeah, he's a twin.
Yeah.
I think I said this before, but they did it because it saved money on CGI.
Yeah, absolutely. So he just looks... So he can only turn into people who have twins, basically, the T-1000.
He's also in Gremlins 2, I think. So he did really, really well. so I love 7. And we can't forget the Shawshank Redemption came out.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that topped the best film of all time lists for decades.
It's still number one on the IMDb, yeah. I think. And it is... I love it.
Oh, you know what? Fargo as well. I absolutely love Fargo. I think it's probably my favourite Coen Brothers film. I mean, it's a superb piece of work.
There are.
I watched it again recently. Might be the reason I'm.
I can't believe he's chosen Forrest Gump above all of these.
No, I mean I liked Forrest Gump, but it's not a patch on these films. So what would you go for? Do you think?
I'm annoyed because I'm going to go the film I think is one of the film about hope, which was the greatest ever films. And a great story is a Shawshank Redemption. It's not necessarily shot in an amazing way. It's a brilliant story. You've got a great central performance, and it started off the whole spate of Morgan Freeman narrating everything.
Yeah. Get busy living or get busy dying.
Basically, set up a whole career just narrating that. And
there he goes, Andy Dufresne.
It's just, I always watch it. But then I love Seven. I think it's great.
Seven is brilliant.
And also, the best documentary, we should do documentaries as well. There's a documentary called American Movie, I've talked about before, which is one of my favourite films, about this crazy filmmaker in Wisconsin and his friend Mike, who's overdosed on mushrooms. If you want to watch one of the funniest documentaries of all time about filmmaking, watch American Movie. I can't say enough good things about it. First of all, you start watching, you think, this is a bit weird. And then you become engrossed in their mission. People who aren't necessarily the most intelligent people, but just powered by determination and will to succeed.
It's really good. It's really good. Well, the 2000s.
2000s. What did he go for, Amelie?
Yes. I enjoyed Amelie.
Starting to lose a lot of respect for Fran Jolly. As he's got older, his film choices have become really, really bad.
Some honourable mentions, I mean... There Will Be Blood, I thought, was excellent. Really good. Gladiator was the 2000s in 2000.
The only good thing about the Gladiator is just the fighting scenes.
Yeah, but it, in terms of influential films, it brought the epic back, didn't it? I mean, it's not the best film in the world, but Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind... 2004, I think, is excellent. Lord of the Rings all came out in the 2000s, but no.
One of the films I was really surprised by I love the City of God Brazilian film when they follow the young gang that nut, and they're all actual street kids they use rather than actors, and it felt so refreshing compared to everything else around. I think that's led to a whole load of different, that seems to be the first one that led to all these, you know, employing street, which they did in what's the one, that Slumdog Millionaire, they picked those of, and that felt like that idea of getting street kids to perform in it came from City of God. I don't know, but that looks, in terms of the colour palette and the way it was shot and the drama, it felt like I was going into a whole new world. I really like that.
Oh man, I'm so pleased to hear that.
And another one is Downfall,
which is the
Hitler Bunker.
It's the Hitler Bunker film, the perennially parodied on YouTube one. It's a phenomenal piece of work, Downfall. For me, I'm trying to decide between Children of Men and Pan's Labyrinth.
Why would you pick Children of Men? That's Buddy the dog in the background.
Hello, mate. Basically, I think it's such a good piece of work in using CG in such a sparing, classy way to make something that's very real. Like, it feels so potentially possible, you know. I mean, Clive Owen, I don't think I've ever really enjoyed him in anything apart from this.
I mean, he feels to me like he's only ever 40% alive.
Yeah, but no, but that suits this, because everything's so... everyone feels like the world is on top of them. They're all just trying to survive. I think it's really good. And the whole supporting cast is fantastic as well.
Sorry, are you trying to tell me you fancy Clive Owen?
I'm not trying to tell you that. I'm telling you it overtly.
Even in Croupier, do you like him?
I haven't seen Croupier. I've heard that's the one that sort of made him, you know, a leading man, made him good.
Clive Owen. So you're picking any film made by Clive Owen?
No, it's that or Pan's Labyrinth for me, which I think is again just a fantastic piece of work.
Draw some hands on your eyes on your hands and you're done.
You're done, that's it.
Draw some eyes on your hands and get into some sort of magic cave.
Yeah, and be sort of a beautiful, magical, real metaphor for a child's torment.
I'm going to pick one that hasn't been on any lists. It was nominated for, I think, best foreign language film in 2001. It's called Elling. It's about these two, I don't know what the PC way of saying this is, special needs, is that, can you say it anymore? I mean, you can, it's constantly changing.
You sound like an old man. You can say special needs.
I don't think you can.
Why?
I'm convinced I've heard you can't say that anymore. Anyway, these two men in their 40s who have to leave the home and live together and start a life, and they try and get girlfriends and do things like that. It's a really nice sort of Norwegian, I think it's Norwegian, or it's that sort of Scandinavian area comedy. Elling. Elling. Watch it.
Cool. Well, that's us for this week.
If you want to put your thing, people want to put, we can put it on Facebook or something. Cool.
Yeah, we'll put our choices on Facebook and then you can add yours to it. Tell us what your favourites of each decade are. And we should also say we do all of this for free, so the only reason we can do this week on week on week is because of your donations. So if you would like to help towards our running costs, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the links from there. And to everyone who has, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week. Keep watching the films. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.